Today on Rainbow Country, singer, songwriter, producer, host of Toronto Song Project, Steve Degay. Stay tuned, the Gay Talk Radio Toronto style, right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide for Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. So, for all things Rainbow Country, especially for the full experience, the full 2-hour episode, make sure you check out the archives at my website, marktara.com. Look for the archives banner, and that's where you'll find all 4 years of Rainbow Country now in doing 2 hours now. marktara.com. So, before there was Pose, before RuPaul's Drag Race, before Paris is Burning, there was 1968's The Queen, the mother of all drag documentaries. Director Frank Simon takes us backstage into the cutthroat world of drag pageantry. So here's the deal. On Sunday, July 28th, there's a special screening of The Queen at Hot Docs Ted Rogers Cinema, 506 Bloor Street West, basically Bloor and Bathurst. There's going to be a drag brunch that starts around 11 a.m. Then there's a performance by Toronto drag queen Fontaine. And then the screening of the documentary, The Queen, and that's happening around 12 noon. Again, this is happening Sunday, July 28th at Hot Dogs Ted Rogers Cinema, 506 Bloor Street West. For more information and ticket information, all that sort of good stuff, hotdogs.ca. So my friends, this is episode 160. Today, I spotlight singer, songwriter, producer, host of Toronto Song Project, Steve Degay. We're going to find out all about Toronto Song Project. His musical group from the 2000s, Brother Love Canal, and more. So my friends, this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with Steve Degay's 2000 musical group, Brother Love Canal, with their track, Hold Tight. That, up next.
Bigger than your home.
So joining me in studio, he is a producer, a director, a songwriter. He is Steve Degay. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Mark. Thanks.
Well, first of all, I always say this, and I'm going to say it right now. Thank you for being here, taking your time to be with me here in studio. I much appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's exciting to be here. Thanks.
So you are a songwriter, you're a musician, you're a producer, you're a director, all that sort of stuff. And you started essentially all this stuff in the 90s, like the early 90s, working in music and television. How did that come about for you? How did you originally start back in the 90s?
Well, it's a pretty typical trajectory, I guess. I started, I left Ottawa when I was about 18 to study communication studies in Montreal. And there I touched a little bit in everything, television, radio, music production, a little bit of everything. And I sought music production out on my own more. But then I just took it off from there. I started with wedding videos. I went to commercial videos, like corporate stuff, mm-hmm. doing stuff for Gillette. And then I moved to Toronto to work. I worked at the French network here, TFO, for a little while. And then I worked for TVO. And then I worked for YTV. I worked for all kinds of places. And I started using my TV contacts to get music gigs. So,
okay,
yeah. Yeah, because they were often looking for music. They were often looking for theme music and stuff. So I started there. I started saying, hey, I could do this for you. And they would look at me like, what? What are you doing? They weren't used to having a music person in the room with them.
Right.
So it gave me a little bit of advantage, gave me a little bit of leverage.
Do you come from a musical or a creative family?
No, really not. I'm the only one. I'm the only one who works in the arts.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think that came from in regards to yourself? Because it seems like you might be a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, definitely in my family. I think they all had a little bit of the creative urge. My brother writes a little bit. I actually got him to work on some writing jobs with me. Where did I start? I was lucky. I always loved, you know, sketch comedy. I always loved music. I've loved music since I can listen. Like I bought Elton John's Greatest Hits when I was 6 years old and ABBA and all that. And I've just been obsessed with the radio. I would listen to the radio instead of going out with my friends. And I was lucky enough by the time I was leaving high school and I had no clue what to do. I had no clue where to go. I had a guidance counselor who said, there's a broadcast program. There's in television and radio and stuff in Montreal. Why don't you try that? And I said, you can do that? I said, I did not know you could do that. I didn't know that was a thing. Ottawa was a pretty small place at the time. Everybody did poli-sci or business admin, and that was it. So I thought it was one of those two things, or maybe social work. I did not know where I was going, so I lucked in there.
Where do you find your sweet spot is? Is it in songwriting? Is it in directing, producing, being a musician? Where do you find your particular sweet spot?
I would say it's songwriting. That's what I like the most. That's what I like the most. But again, you know, I think in most people's lives are a series of trajectories, you know, and I wrote the television thing. I wrote directing for quite a while. I wrote producing for quite a while. I've done some writing. And I think just right now, songwriting just feels really, really good. But I still really enjoy video. I find video is so much fun. And I love all the new tools available. I love that you can just pick up your phone. I wish that was around. I wish that was around when I was younger because I had to go through, you know, I mean, it was great. As soon as I got my first job in television, it was like, here's some equipment, go make something and we're going to pay you. And that was just incredible. Like that, I couldn't even believe that was happening. And I got to sit in an edit suite and stuff. So yeah, sorry, I kind of went on to off.
Do you enjoy the editing process in regards to video?
Listen, I have
being creative is one thing, editing.
Yeah. Okay. I have spent literally thousands of hours in edit suites in my life. So I don't ever need to spend another minute in an edit suite. But I still, out of necessity, because I'm I'm producing my own series now, I still edit. I try to farm it out as much as possible, but I'm a picky bastard. So often it's just like, oh, just give me the damn thing and I'll start cutting it. But yeah, editing is, yeah.
Let's talk about a particular project of yours that I think was around in the late 90s, the 2000s, Brother Love Canal.
Yes.
When was that time frame?
It started. We did our first recording. We started by recording, and that was in 1998. Okay. We did a little mini CD with, I think it had three tracks on it. And then we played that got me into Pride. And we did a Pride show right after that. And then we were in the clubs that we were playing. Yeah.
You guys did Pride. You did TV, like city TV and local TV, all that sort of stuff. Did you actually get onto much music? Back then?
No, we weren't on much music. We were on breakfast television and we were on, do you remember a TV show? It was like in the beginning, The Lofters, I think it was called.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
So we had
Arisa Cox.
Yeah. Yeah.
Started there.
Yeah. We were on that, on their live feed at one point.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was a good time.
Were you also on the cover of Now Magazine?
Yes. Yes.
With Brother Love Canal?
Yeah. Brother Love Canal. We got onto the cover for, it was the Pride edition. We got onto the cover for that. So that was good. And that happened early too. That was 2001. After releasing our first CD, we didn't really start playing. We probably started playing about a year after that, where I finally got together a good live. We were doing electronic music live, which is not obvious. You know, you don't want it to be too complicated, but at the same time, you don't want it to be somebody pressing play on an iPod, which is what or a laptop. So it took a while for us to get that together, to get together a good, solid live act.
And there were what, three members?
Yes, three core members: myself, Leslie Kervorst, and Matthew Starr. Me and two singers. But then we had, we went through different incarnations. We had a bass player, we had a percussionist, we had a guitarist. So it changed a little bit over the years, but that was essentially it. We were usually about five people on stage.
Any particular memories stand out to you during your Brother Love Canal days?
Oh, wow. I could not pick one. I mean, playing Pride Windsor was pretty trippy. It was fun.
Okay.
You know what I'd say? I would say we used to play a place called the Manhattan Club. Mm-hmm. And it was on, what's that side street? It's at Bloor.
Balmuto Street.
Yes. Yes. Balmuto Street. We used to play there.
Yeah. Downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah. We had
it. Was it a black club at the time?
Yeah.
Because it was a gay black club.
There was a guy who hosted a night called Black Cat. So that's probably why you're remembering that. So anyways, we had one night a month or one night a week and we called it it was a weekly and we called it I Wanna Fuck Fridays. Because we had a song called I Wanna Fuck. Yeah. And that was always our closer. And that, you know, we bring the house down with that. That was our big finale. And so we did a weekly gig there. And there was an Irish pub upstairs. And they would call the cops on us every single night.
Wow.
Because we were loud, because we had like the boom, boom, pumping bass, and the guy would come down screaming at us that the ashtrays were moving on his table. And yeah, that was, I would say that's the longest running memory I have with Brother Love Canal.
I wanna fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a fun one. That was a fun one.
Well, on that note, Steve, let's take a break and we'll be right back.
You bet.
This is Brad Fraser, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Bill 7. To ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill, but without some progressive conservative legislators' backing, a divisive split could rack the province. Four PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
Look who I have here. It's entertainer and trans-activist Shika Dadiva. How you doing, girl?
Fabulous. Thank you. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. It You have a burning question. I know that you're just burning to ask me, so go ahead.
I need to know, how do we get in touch with you?
Well, thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
People can get in touch with me on social media at Mark Tara Music on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, even at Mark Tara Music. If you have an idea for the show, if you want to be on the show, you know someone who should be on the show, get in touch with me or send me an email, mark@marktara.com.
Fabulous.
I'm Sky Gilbert, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
So, Steve Degay, your current project is Toronto Song Project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, what is Toronto Song Project? What is this project all about?
Okay. It's a project where I look for people who have a good singing voice and an interesting story to tell. People who are willing to share something about their lives. It's usually something, an event in their lives or something powerful, something that really affected them or changed them. It's often something traumatic. It's almost always something traumatic. They tell me their story, and then I try to capture it in a song. I try to write them a song that captures that story, and then they sing it. So the show captures that whole drama from beginning to end, from me meeting them, from me listening to their story, from me going off, writing something, playing it for them. They tell me if they like it or not. And then
the performance.
Yeah. And then the performance.
That must be challenging for you, I would think, as a songwriter, no?
It is. Yeah, it definitely is. But I mean, any songwriter will say anything that gets you writing is really, really good. Mm-hmm. I went to LA for a couple of years to work in the music business. I studied some music production while I was down there, and this was in 2011. And while I was there, I did some songwriting sessions, and one of our exercises was to interview someone and write them a song. And it came out surprisingly easy, and it was a lot of fun. And the song was actually pretty cool. And I've always had a love of Bob Dylan, of folk singers, of people who are just, you know, kind of out there with a guitar telling the story of taking a snapshot of the country, of that place they're living at that time and putting it into songs. I've always had a romantic idea of that. So this was my way of capturing it. As soon as I did that, I thought, I should do this as a TV show. I should meet people and write them songs, and we'll make a TV show out of it. So I pitched it to Bell, and they took it, and it was really fun. We spent about at least 2 or 3 weeks just looking for people. And we called churches, we called choirs, we called homeless shelters. We went on every social media platform. We just tried to get people. And we had such a cool mix of singers. People, some of them found us and some of them we found. And their stories were really, really powerful.
And what season are you on to now?
Okay. So I did 4 episodes with them, and then I took a break, and now last year I relaunched it, but I'm just relaunching it independently. I just decided I want to do this guerrilla style. As much as I love doing it with Bell, and you know what? It was a great way to get me started, because when you do a show like this, it's good to have a Bell truck behind you because otherwise people are like, who the F are you? Really? And who do you think you are to write me a song? Like, you know, it just gives you that little bit of credibility. Mm-hmm. And now that I've got that behind me, now I can do it solo. And I want it to feel more like an indie film. I want it to feel more like indie camera, indie style. Mm-hmm. The Bell series felt a little too produced. It felt too much like an Oprah show. It felt too much like a, you know, I used news crews. I used CTV crew when I was there. So they've got a style. Okay. And it was hard to break away from that style. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to be more independent. So now it's kind of come full circle where I'm producing my own episodes and I'm shopping the series around again. So
those original 4 episodes, are they still available?
Yes.
On Bell?
Yes. They're on YouTube now. Bell rotates their footage. So it was up there for a few years, and now it's, and I don't think it's up on 5.1 anymore.
But it was originally there?
Yeah, yeah. It was up there for a good long while. And every so often they give me a call. They say, hey, your show got a real spike. You know, like something led into your show. And, and they said, oh, you got a real boost this week. So that was fun.
And so this new incarnation of it, how many episodes have you done so far?
I'm into it with two, but we're shooting. I'm shooting it very differently. I'm putting it up as shorts, so, and they're longer as well. So a full episode made 22 minutes this time. So I'm doing my second one now, and it's a really powerful story. It's a young lady I met who was a really strong voice. She had studied opera and stuff. She had come from the farm. She came from a small, very small community, homeschooled. And then ended up in Toronto in an abusive relationship. So going from, you know, small Christian country farm to being in the big city. And yeah, so that's coming out soon.
And if people are interested in checking this new incarnation out, where do they go?
TorontoSongProject.com, where the shows are hosted on YouTube mostly, sometimes on IGTV on Instagram. But if you just go to TorontoSongProject.com, the latest, greatest is always on the front page.
Oh, cool. Did you, your time in LA, did you study at UCLA?
Yes. Yes.
Doing songwriting?
Yeah, songwriting. It was called independent music production. So it was a little bit of everything. It was basically how to launch yourself as a musician, as a songwriter, as an artist in the modern world of music. So they would teach you marketing, online marketing, social media, all that. But of course, anything you take in anything you learn in that world is good for the time you're there. And then the whole game changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's a completely, like I left there in 2013. And the game has completely changed since 2013. Yeah.
So I understand that you like a couple of genres of music, like you like top 40 music and you like punk music. Talk to me about the correlation between, in your opinion, the correlation between top 40 music and punk music.
Okay. I would say the first thing they have in common is they just physically crank me up. Okay. Like, you know, a good pop song just makes me want to jump, makes me want to dance, makes me want to go crazy. Mm-hmm. Same thing with punk. It just makes me want to fucking lose my mind. You know, like a good fast song with like a strong hook. It just drives me crazy. And the two are just, they tend to be nice short songs. Like I think I love the economy of words in them. Like you have so few words, so little time to have an impact. And I think those are the two genres that really pull that off. And they're not obsessed. And this serves my own purposes. They're not obsessed with musical prowess. You do not have to be extremely skilled to be in either of them. Well, okay, you need talent, of course, but you don't need those technical skills to be really good in those genres. You just need a lot of spirit, a lot of energy, and a willingness to just put it out there.
What are some of your favorite punk bands or groups, that sort of thing?
Oh, God, so many. Well, my first love affair, I mean, Sex Pistols and The Clash back in the day when they were still new. And later, I mean, Gang of Four. I freaking love Gang of Four, though I don't know if they're more like post-punk. And then my next huge, huge musical crush, Jesus and Mary Chain, which was later. But yeah, the idea that they would take these kind of Beach Boys-like melodies and just put a wall of feedback and noise behind this was just mesmerizing. I couldn't even believe you could be that good. And then my last big punk crush, I'd say, well, that kind of music crush was the Pixies in the late 80s. And then after that, I had a few that I liked. But yeah, those were the main ones. And every so often I hear like, I don't know, I guess you can't really call it punk, but good fast songs, you know, and you know, that kind of thing. I heard the Ravenettes were really fun. And I still hear new music coming out that I really like.
Do you find that those styles influence your particular writing? Especially if you're creating, say, a song for someone that you heard their story and you're creating a song for them. Do those sort of influences come into that songwriting process, maybe even subconsciously?
Yeah, more than a little. Because when I play, I write with guitar. So, and my go-to, I just start da-na-na-na-na-na-na. And I have to stop myself. Like, I have to turn on a beat. I have to turn something on to just get myself out of that. In the first season of Toronto Song Project, I whispered a song for a lady. And that I mean, I got a lot of help. We ended up getting her gospel director, Karen Burke from the Toronto Mass Choir, helped us out with that. Thank God, because I was in it. But I mean, that was an example of how I just needed to get my head out of that space. And even Martha, my guest, the first time, I wish I'd gotten this on film, but the first time I played her song, she turned to me and she just looked so down, so dejected. And she said, "You wrote me a country song." Wow. And I thought that was so unintentional, but mm-hmm. I think it was more my delivery, you know, because I was playing it on guitar and I was trying to get a certain rhythm going. And then my voice kind of gave it away. And she was like, what did you just do? And then that's when we brought in a gospel piano player and stuff, and we brought it into her space, and that worked out. But yeah, to answer your question, I have to fight to not make that always the sound, that kind of fast.
Going back to your TV days, you were nominated for some awards, some what? Canadian Screen Awards?
Yeah. Those are fun. There's some that I'm, well, okay.
What, Tumbletown Tales?
Oh, shit. This is going to plague my life. I did a series of kids' videos for TVO with a hamster, and he would, like, solve math problems. I know. Goddamn. And this is going to follow me forever. My nieces and nephews freaking loved it. Whenever I would play them for it, they would all jump in front of the TV. They couldn't wait. And they were fun. We really did have fun making them. But it's like, oh, God, I don't know if this is what I want to be remembered for. But anyways, I guess there's worse. They are really funny shows. They really are funny shows.
That's something to be proud of. You were nominated.
Yeah. I am. You know, when I got the nomination, when you see your name on the nomination, that is pretty exciting. But yeah, I did get, there was a Brother Love Canal song that I adapted for, I got approached by a TV show, and they said, can we use that song? So I adapted it for the show to make like a 30-second opening, mm-hmm. and that got nominated for the French one, the French version, the Gémeaux in Montreal. So they got best theme song for – again, it was a nomination. I didn't win it, but that was still exciting.
In my book, a nomination is a win.
Yes. I felt that way too.
Yes.
I felt that way too.
On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm Glenn Dixon, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto, and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
So Steve Degay, producer and host of Toronto Song Project, you have an interesting look on your face, like you want to ask me a question. What would it be?
Yeah, well, if I'm not around Tuesday at 11 to listen to the show, how do I hear it?
The best way for people to, you know, listen to Rainbow Country after the fact is through the podcast, which is available on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So people can subscribe. It's for free, and they'll never be without an episode of Rainbow Country. Steve Degay, it's just that simple.
Amazing. So I just search Rainbow Country, and there I am.
Yes.
Amazing.
Hey there, it's David Dixon, Canadian fashion designer, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Rainbow Country,
So, Steve Degay, I'm interested to know how you would consider yourself on the sexual spectrum. I personally don't like to say, you know, are you this, that, and the other? I like the person to say, Mark, I am fabulous. I am fabulously gay, girl. So what about yourself?
Well, I'm fabulous. And I identify as a gay man. I like to identify as queer as well.
Just for you, because, what's the difference in regards to you saying that you're gay and saying that you're queer?
That's a difficult thing to define. That's a really good question.
Do you see queer as being, say, more political potentially? And gay being like your sexuality?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. I always felt, okay, look, I guess there's some of us gay men and gay people, whatever, where you don't always completely identify with your group. And it's not anything tangible. It's just you're in a group full of gay men and you just have trouble talking. You have trouble getting a word in, or there's, you know, you just don't 100% identify with all of the things they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's where the queer thing to me comes in. That kind of helps. Like when I'm around people who are more like, I guess because more queer people tend to be DJs and in bands, I identify with that. So that those are the people I feel 100% let my guard down, hang out with. They're cool. We just get along. We get each other, you know, and there's this kind of So when I'm around a lot of gay men, I find myself more, I guess, trying to keep up, trying to fit in. Yeah, it's more of an effort, I guess I could say.
Would you consider yourself more alternative, more punk, in a sense, in regards to like who you are and your style, like more so maybe inside?
Yeah, I would say that my soul is still punk. My soul just loves freaking loud thrashing music and just losing my shit.
Do you think that there's a gay culture in regards to punk in particular?
It's small. It's very small. I found that out after when I left. When Brother Love Canal, we split up in around, I think it was 2004. And that's when I started my own group called Senor Casio. And I would perform with a few other musicians. And we started as kind of a surf punky thing where we would have like sequencer with drums. And then we just went to a regular drum bass guitar thing. And that's where I have to say I did the songs I was the most proud of. Mm-hmm. And that's where I just had so much fun. That's really where I was in a good place, just writing stuff that I just loved and doing the fun things that I loved. It was so hard to get an audience for that stuff. I mean,
why do you think so?
In the gay community, there just isn't a desire for it. But you know, you might have experienced this yourself. I mean, when I started Brother Love Canal, it was about bringing the joy of a gay club to the straight world. You know, like let's just like just that openness, that fun, throw your hands up, dance to some good dance pop, to some good electronic. Like that's what that was about. And yet the gay community didn't really want, like we did okay with them, but we always played around Queen Street and other places. We played a bit in the Village or near the Village, but we didn't hit it off with the gay community better than the straight community, even though that was really my goal, was to kind of – like they didn't care that we had an actual diva on stage who sang. That's not what they're about. Like that's not the gay –
And why do you think – because to me that – I agree with you 110%. It's like if you're a drag queen and you're on Church Street, they'll love you no matter what. Even if you don't know the words to the song.
I know. You see something and I'm like,
what are they saying?
You're just physically moving in a dress.
But if you're a live band doing music and you're all talented and they can care less, a lot of them.
No, and I've even seen some drag queens sing and they were freaking phenomenal, and that did not add anything to their score. Like I got mad respect for that. That's what people want. So
why do you think that is though?
I do not know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's they're buying into the fantasy of something. I don't. It's. I mean, I do not watch RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. And you've seen. I mean, I think there was Brooklyn Heights was at Woody's. I only know this because my boyfriend watches the show. So, and he showed me photos, and the lineup was four people wide and around the block. Mm-hmm. So it's just what gay people want to watch. So, going back to your question. The punk thing didn't work. It worked even less in the gay community than this previous show did. Occasionally, buddies would throw me a bone and let me play on their stage. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we didn't. Or the best times we had would be on a bill with other bands. And then we would do okay. You know?
When you're writing, not necessarily for someone else, but for yourself, when you're writing something for you, for Steve, do you find that you are writing from a gay perspective, a queer perspective, that sort of thing? Like, does your sexuality come into your songwriting when you're writing for yourself?
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yeah. All the songs I had were about loving men, for sure.
Really?
Heartbreak from men, not working out with men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not having, you know, that longing.
But was this for Brother Love Canal or for all your groups?
I would say all of them, okay. All of them. Brother Love Canal, yeah. I mean, if I look back at some of the songs, there were heartbreak songs, and it was about loving a man. It was about, like, you know, it was about the longing. It was the if only, and, you know, the same things that pop songs tend to be about, you know, that kind of – I find a lot of pop songs are just about – it was so close, if only, you know, love in a broken place, that sort of thing.
The reason that I mentioned that in regards to Brother Love Canal was because I know that you had a female singer.
And yes.
You had a male singer as well, a black guy, but you yes. also sang as well. So
yeah.
I was just wondering if the words that were like, you know, he doesn't love me, that sort of thing, if that was more coming from a female. The female voice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I would write it for a female voice, but I think it was... It's where Leslie and I connected, you know. Leslie was the same. She was like, we were both kind of like, I hope she wouldn't mind me saying this, but we were having, you know, we were throughout the course, the 5 or 6 years that we were together, we were both, you know, falling in love and failing over and over. So, you know, we both had our heartbreaks during that time. So I think we kind of connected that way. I would write something. It was me doing the songwriting, but, you know, she would let me know if something was good or not,
yeah.
You know.
Why did that particular project, Brother Love Canal, why did that disband or that sort of thing?
It just came to an end. You know what? I think it came to me at a precise moment, and it was when we finally launched our album, Little Tingles. We played at the Horseshoe, and we headlined, and it was a great time. We filled the room. We filled the room, and the whole place was jumping, and we had just been on City TV for another thing for our album launch party, which I did at a box. Like, everything was going well, but then we were on stage, and I just thought, fuck, we're a bar band. You know, it really felt like, as much as this was a good time, this was what we were going to be. We were going to be a bar band. You know, I didn't see any way for us to tour or any, I didn't really? See us growing and, mm-hmm. and, you know, you need to grow because I was exhausted, you know, just organizing the gigs, mm-hmm. writing the songs, recording, doing the publicity, trying to get media, all that stuff. It just,
you were a one man band.
Yeah. I did all that stuff, you know, so it runs you to the ground. Yeah.
Are you proud of what that particular project, that group accomplished?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I look back at that. So many warm memories.
Yeah.
And I still listen to some of the songs make me cringe, but most of them don't. Mm. And most of, there's a couple in there I think, damn. Well, it just, at least in terms of I wanted to do this and it did, wow, I nailed that one.
So, Steve, if people want to find out more about you, your Toronto Song Project, more information, that sort of thing, how can they do that?
The best place is torontosongproject.com. That's where all my stuff is. That's where all my latest stuff is. Like, what I'm trying to do with my projects now is really, yeah, I want them to be about music and unity. I want to bring people together in the same room and just experience something together musically. I want it to take people out of isolation. I want them to be close again. Hmm. So I'm hosting shows in the city, and whatever you want to find out, if you're at all interested in what we're doing, come to torontosongproject.com.
Well said, Steve Deegay. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's so good to see you.
This is Nicky Ward, and like me, you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
That was my spotlight on singer, songwriter, producer, and host, Steve Deegay. For all things Steve Deegay, like he mentioned just now, check out his website, torontosongproject.com.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome back. This is hour two of Rainbow Country, where I tend to feature music from independent recording artists with a special focus on LGBT recording artists, people that you may have heard of, artists that you may not have heard of as of yet. But if you stay with me, if you stick with me, I hope to bring you music worth hearing. Kicking off hour two of Rainbow Country, Agent Provocateur herself, Carol Pope. That up next.
Hey, this is DJ Cosmic Cat, and you are tuned to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight. and how she made it end. Some velvet morning when I'm straight. Flowers are the things we know. Secrets are the things we grow. Learn from us very much. Look at us, but do not touch. Phaedra is my name.
Straight on a stick. Look, there's a drum circle. Maybe we could join in. Let's go down to the fire pit and roast some tofu dogs. Maybe some dykes in a tent will have some beer. We're lesbians in the forest. Let's go to the S&M tent and learn how to fist fuck. We can do whatever we want, cause this is a man-free zone. Except for the guys who empty the chains, we don't call them Johns. Here at the Michigan Women's Festival, we worship the goddess. We're lesbians in the forest. Why does everybody with a frightening body walk around naked? Why do women grow facial hair? Why do I have to look at that? No offense to anyone who's transitioning. Oh, fuck! There's my ex! With her new girlfriend. But you are so much hotter. You're Ellen's ex, Katie's ex, Alicia's ex, Portia's ex, the Indigo's ex, Jody's ex, my ex, 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 ex. We're lesbians in the forest.
No X key score, this is a forest, same sex schmorgas, fuck a Greek chorus. I swore this would be a dinosaur weekend, dyke beacon, hair Mohican. I diddle a woodland fairy, whittle my woody scary, middle of me is hairy, middle of me is dairy. Nymphs, fairies, witches, not a cock in sight, cause sisters are doing themselves all night.
Yeah, in the forest. We're lesbians in the forest. We're lesbians in the forest.
And welcome back. Not a cock in sight. Oh, Carol Pope, you agent provocateur, you. That is Carol Pope off of her 2014 EP, Music for Lesbians. We just heard three tracks. Just now we heard the title track, Lesbians in the Forest. Before that, Some Velvet Morning. And starting off that three-song set, Francis Bacon. For all things Pope, Carol Pope, make sure you check out her website, carolpope.com. Coming up next, London Calling.
Hi, I'm Liberty Silver, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
In translation, standing in the pouring rain at Tokyo Densha, things are so different now, really so. And curves of hope, what's been lost. Steps carved from handcuffed lost, like old regrets that are forever locked. Bamboo forests whisper in the breeze, names of those who took their leave. All the hopes we tried to achieve, scattered in the translucent. The clouds are parting ways. Fuji is calling. Night skies are falling, but it's not dark yet. Streets at the end of the day, when geishas emerge and scurry away, like tomorrow's promise we heed and obey, like we always thought we should. The fading of the snow on Shirigawa Gorge,
welcome back. This is Rainbow Country, CIUT's gay radio show, working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. So in that last three-song musical set that we just heard, we heard Weatherstones, European group. We heard their track, Weatherstones. Before that, September's Here. And starting off that three-song Weatherstones set, Hello London. I love that song. It's so catchy. It sounds like something from the, like the 60s or something. Well done. Well done. So for all things Weatherstone, check out their website, weatherstones.net. Weatherstones.net. So coming up next, a three-song calypso set from Roger Gibbs, who's based here in Toronto with his group Shack Shack. We're going to hear three of his tracks. We're going to hear Shack Shack Party. We're also going to hear Calypso History. And the reason that I'm mentioning these songs beforehand is because, especially for Calypso History, he's basically telling about the history of Calypso music when it comes to Canada. So that three-song Calypso set up next.
Hi, I'm singer-songwriter Steve Grand, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara. It's DIUT 89.5 FM.
Shack, shack, shack. give this word. This is our battle cry of freedom today. It runs to Carnival, I know. It's a real big bacchanal, I know. It runs to Carnival, I know. It's the sweetest festival, I know. Everybody dancing, putting on a show. Together we moving, down the road we go. It runs to Carnival, I know. It's a real big bacchanal, I know. You don't have to put on a fancy dress. There's no need to wear a costly headdress. Protect your head from the heat when you're in the sun. Fear a Nike on your feet, like you're ready to run. It's a run to Carnival, I know. It's a real big bacchanal, I know. It's a run to Carnival, I know. It's a sweetest festival, I know. Everybody dancing, putting on a show. Together we moving, down the road we go. It's a run.
Song Calypso set we just heard Toronto Carnival. Before that, Calypso History. And starting off that three song Calypso set, Shack Shack Party. Shack Shack Party. That is Roger Gibbs and his group Shack Shack. And I don't know if you were able to really tune in and hear the lyrics in the second track, Calypso History, but it's basically, you know, spelling out the history of Calypso when it comes to the Caribbean community and Canada. It's kind of awesome. So to find out more about Roger Gibbs, Shack Shack, check out their website, spiritofcalypso.com. spiritofcalypso.com. And you can also find them on Facebook as well. You just type in Roger Gibbs, Shack Shack. They'll come up on Facebook as well. So coming up next, a three song set from the female gaze. Stay with me.
Hey, this is Rye Daisies, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Forget it's a new sensation. It's gonna take you home. I'm amazed. you can let it get so out of hand. I know you gotta let it show, let it go. Tell me straight, are you bold enough for a whole new lesson? I'm gonna teach you right. Don't be sorry, don't be ashamed. Look in my eyes if you know my name. Get it right. You gotta get it right. Get it right.
We'll be right back.
sense of history. I grew up learning how to hide my secrets, but now I found my people all around, and you have found you ain't seen nothing yet. Whoa. I am who I am, I don't know what you said to me. I am who I am, I don't know what you do. I am who I am, I don't know what you take for me. To myself will be true.
Three great women voices, all from Toronto. There you go. We just heard, just now we heard Anna Goodmanis, I Am Who I Am. Before that, Alana Hart, Like Water. And starting off that three song set, Maria Ryan, Nothing Is Free. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So get Rainbow Country for free wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, including the full 2-hour episodes. Just look for the archives banner, marktara.com. Next week, from PR to fashion with Max McDonald. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
This is Ori Dagan, jazz singer-songwriter. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.